bitch, jungleist, specialist, predator, and survivalist. Spit in heaven, fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program, with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. And that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there, always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Different African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:08 in the city of Philadelphia, 11:06, 2020 is the date, and it's a Friday evening here, and the Time for an Awakening program is ready to begin. Again, it's 8:09 this chilly Friday evening, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, we'll talk about it. You can give us a call at 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:14 here in the city of Philadelphia. And before we get started, let me welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia, 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm, you know, just, you know, cruising on. I know people are going to think I'm parasitic, but cruising on Black America's, what's that, apprehension, suspense, drama, anticipation, exhilaration for their potential contribution of squeezing out a possible Biden win, you know, but just feeding off of that. Yes, I keep using this word, that contradiction that's coming up. That, you know, have you heard whether they decided yet?
No, I haven't. No, and this is one of the, in fact, this is the focal point is on Pennsylvania, really, and Philadelphia in particular. No, I haven't heard anything.
What's getting me is Nevada. Like, how many people in Nevada? I ain't expecting it. It's just rhetorical because, I mean, it's but what, 2 days? Like, they can't have that many people that they can't count.
Well, most people I would assume live in Las Vegas and maybe Reno. If they may have a few other smaller cities there, but most of Nevada is, you know, plains or desert area. So I don't know, you know. It's a lot of those states out there that don't really have that much population. You got more population in major cities than you have in some states out there, Montana and states like that. You know, they don't really have that much population out there. You might have a couple million people that live in a particular state out there. And you might have 2 million black folks alone that live in certain urban areas. So, you know.
That's why it's like throwing me off. Like, why is it taking so long? I mean, you know, look at the suspense, right? He's supposed to have 264 in electoral votes, right? And if I understand it right, what people are saying, you need 270. Nevada only has 6 electoral votes. Now, I've been hearing they've been counting Nevada that, you know, like since Tuesday. And they haven't, like, it's that Philadelphia, which, as you say, got more people. I believe they got more people in one section of the city than maybe Nevada got in a county. And they're almost complete.
Yeah, I mean, I have no clue to, you know, what they're doing. I noticed listen, the television is going to always play up a certain blacks or so-called leading blacks or blacks in quote-unquote leadership. And, you know, that they'll focus on, you know, some of the so-called people on the street. And you hear the euphoria among some of our folks. But, you know, the question is, you know, the organizations that's going on and the organizations that's being formed and the organizations that have been formed out here among our people to lead towards eventual freedom and sovereignty is still going to work. The work still continues. The question is, you know, because you're always concerned about me. I'm always concerned about our people as a whole until they prove otherwise. So you're always concerned about the folks that really don't know, that don't have all the information, that are led by people that supposed to have their best interests at heart. And I'm talking about black leadership that leads them down a blind alley. I mean, this type of dog and pony show, we've seen it before when people came out in large numbers. And just in the past 30 years, when people came out in large numbers for Clinton, when he ran against Bush the first time. Bush's daddy, and he lost. Clinton won because of the black vote. Twice. And we see what happened during that Clinton administration. That crime bill that Biden authored, or was one of the main authors behind it, pushing it, and that was passed by Clinton and black leadership at that time. And the residual effects on what it has done to generations of black people. And it's still going on now. When Obama ran against Bush Jr. Well, who did he run against the first time? Was it Bush Jr.? Yeah. I didn't forget, to be honest.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was...
It was?
His first run, wasn't it? Wasn't that his first run?
You know what? I'm not even sure. To be honest, I'm no big fan of political follower, but I know that you know, black folks put him over the hump both times. They didn't put his predecessor over the hump, Hillary Clinton, because some blacks started to kind of or get wise to the game. But then, you know, we fall back because, you know, well, the struggle continues. That's all I'm going to say. You know, sometimes I don't know what to say about some of our people. Could, you know, what are you expecting from these folks, be it Democrat or Republican? Look at some of the so-called battleground states, Richard, that pushed this man over the hump. Look at the, you know, and it don't take much. Some of the figures is not current because there's a lot of stuff been going on this past year. But I was just kind of looking at some of the things in a few of the cities that pushed him over. Detroit, which is in Michigan, pushed him over the hump. Detroit, you know, mm-hmm. It's a lot of black cities in Michigan, but Detroit is the largest. He won Wisconsin. I think that was a battleground state.
Right.
He won that because of Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
which is the large black population there. He won Pennsylvania because of Philadelphia and Detroit. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. And then he won Georgia because of that Atlanta and that county area around Atlanta. I think the same thing happened in Florida, but I think he lost Florida, but it was close. But if you look at those states, Richard, we are already familiar with Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. But I'm looking at Philadelphia here. And some of these things were pulled from different, whether it was Brookings. I'm looking at this Economic Policy Institute. And like I said, some of these figures aren't current because, you know, COVID had been going on. So some of these figures is from 2019. But it hasn't much change in these figures, especially for our people. Let me read a couple of these things. This is from the Economic Policy Institute. In the first quarter of 2020, African Americans had the highest unemployment rate nationally. The African American unemployment rate was at or below pre-recession levels in 17 states. So, you know, the unemployment rate being below pre-recession levels, that's total double-digit unemployment for black people, mired in total double-digit unemployment. Now, Philadelphia, the poverty rate is 25.1% for blacks in Philadelphia, the highest among cities with over a million in population. Black people in Philadelphia currently have the highest unemployment rate at 14.6%. Now, for youth, it's a lot higher, but that's the average in Philadelphia, according to current figures, 14.6%. In Philadelphia, there are only 2.5 black businesses operating in Philadelphia. 2.5% of the businesses in Philadelphia that are black. With a poverty rate of 25.1% and an unemployment rate of 14.6%. Now, let's flip over to Pittsburgh. Now, I couldn't find the unemployment rates for there. I just didn't take the time to really kind of dig it out. It's there. But I'll just read this. The city of Pittsburgh, black residents, 34% of them are living below the poverty level. 34% in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has a lot lower population than Philadelphia. But of the 700,000 blacks or 70,000 black residents, 34% of them live below the poverty level. In Detroit, the unemployment rate in Detroit is 17.4%. And 50% of children in Michigan live in concentrated, 50% of black children in Michigan live in concentrated poverty. This is according to stats. Now, I don't know whether poverty or concentrated poverty is worse. Poverty is poverty. But 50% of black children in Michigan live in poverty. In Milwaukee, and this was of July, this is one of the most current ones that I've seen, the unemployment rate for black people in Milwaukee was 14.6%. And the black poverty rate in Milwaukee is the country's highest. And again, Milwaukee don't have the population that Philadelphia has at 34.4%. And that's supposed to be the highest in the country for black people. That's in Milwaukee. Mm. In Atlanta, black residents experienced unemployment rate of 11.5%. So you got a common theme among a lot of these large urban areas that pulled this man over the hump, is that blacks ain't working. And they're living in poverty, which there's no news flash for us. Blacks are not middle class. The Democratic Party, I ain't even talking about the Republican Party. They call it Republican Repugnant and the Democratic Party. I'm not even talking about the Repugnant Party. But the Democratic Party has already said on several occasions that they're the party of the middle class. And that's not black people in this country. They're not. You got some that are. But, I mean, it's a lot of flag waving and cheering. These situations is not going to change when you're dealing with Europeans. It might be new curtains to the window, but the house is still going to be the same. For you and me. The thing is, what is our plans for our children? You know, you talk to the average black person. I'm talking about the average man on the street. And I got a bit of people come in there. Oh, they talking about, oh, I'm glad. Oh, I hope they take him out in handcuffs. Oh, I'm so happy he's out of there. But wait a minute. Where's the long-term plans for your children? If you notice in a lot of these cities, Richard, these, for example, Philadelphia, the Committee of 70, the city fathers and all that stuff, they got all types of plans, Philly 2035 and stuff like that. And if you go down there and look at those city planners, a lot of them is old white men. They might not be around in 2035. So what are they doing? They're planning for their children, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where's our plans for the children? And I'm not talking about ours as a whole, because it's our people out there that's doing some things. They're trying to organize. But I'm just talking to the masses of our people to realize that when you're talking about, oh, I'm glad he's out of there, that's no long-term plans for our children. And who cares if he's out of there? The guy that's taking his seat ain't no better. He's just a polished politician that's been in politics for 40 years, so he knows how to use slick words and everything to mask his racism. This other guy just got in politics 4 years ago, and he's a businessman that's used to, I guess, just saying whatever he wants. And that rubs a lot of white folks the wrong way, because they got an image they want to uphold. And he don't fit the image. Not that they're angry about his policies, and especially his foreign policy. Whites ain't angry. If you remember during that State of the Union, Richard, you had both Democrats and Republicans clapping when he was talking about what he did in Iraq and what he's doing foreign policy-wise.
Mm-hmm.
The Space Force, and we dedicated so many billions of dollars towards our military and all you did. It was clapping on both sides of the so-called aisle. So the foreign policy is not going to change. And all of this guy has been talking about since he's been running is, oh, well, I'm going to do what I'm going to do with COVID. I'm going to do a different approach. Now, okay, the same people that's developing this vaccine for this United States, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. This new guy coming in going to be dealing with the same people, the same so-called scientists, the same people. I mean, some of our people got to start looking at the bigger picture when they're dealing with Europeans. They got to. Or we're going to always find ourselves in a fix. Go ahead, Richard.
I agree wholeheartedly. One, it was Hillary that Obama ran against in 08, I believe.
He didn't run against Hillary. You're talking about in the primary. I was talking about on the other side of the thing.
Oh, so it was Bush, yeah.
It was Bush, yeah. Okay.
And so that's one. And as you were riddling off those numbers, I feel compelled to say, Elliot, I know, you know, I mean, you know, you want to be invisible and all that, but I don't know if the Time for Awakening audience know that Elliot Voice is now the star within a new documentary that was released. And part of that is all throughout providing, you know, these statistics and perspective in the un-American dilemma, which you heard. It was broadcast live last Friday, right? Not the documentary, but the panel discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And then so, and plus it's up for podcasts for people that didn't catch it.
So I think that, giving Elliot his kudos for now being a star, y'all better, better watch out. Cause
you're right.
You might get pulled away. He did such a fantastic job, and Brother Omawale and the team did such a fantastic job with the documentary, The Un-American Dilemma. But to your point in relationship to, one thing that gets me, Ellie, and when I express my ignorance in relationship to, also keeping up to a certain degree about the political theater that is occurring, is that how our conversation sounds like a sports game, and we're watching two competing all-stars. Now, I don't watch sports that much, but I hear people, all the time talk about whether it's boxing, what are the two parts? I mean, they weigh them up. They have and they bet on them, or if it's basketball, what team, they know the stats and they know the power player. And this, to the point that these power players, that's why, all these sneakers, right? That's because of these Jordan and whoever else is out there. It's because people have sized up what that individual has done on the team. So here we come to the presidential election, and it sounds like the way we're engaging it is in the same manner. Now, you gave up numbers of the stress, even taken out. That's because, some of the numbers are reflective of what's going on before the pandemic came in.
Oh, certainly.
Right? I mean, the degree of the poverty, literacy, health, and the pandemic just even added more to the stress and trauma by people seeing people close to them being affected by it. And then it comes down to, even in this theater of whether it's real or whether it's not, by these two political candidates, right? The political theater, the political game, and people are betting on. And the thing that bothers me is that, and I hope that even in discussion, using the Time for Awakening, this platform of Freestyle Friday, that people, we can be able to engage each other on what is the policy that we need to deal with or look at. Whether policy, not the policy they give us, that they're going to deal with COVID, or they're going to deal with what is that? I'm trying to think of what's the political way, what they call it, the political nice way to say the letter community. Because I think it was a commitment that they're going to address, Biden would address the letter community. In the first 100, part of the first 100.
You said
days.
The letter community. Who's that?
The LGBTQ.
Oh, well, I didn't hear anything about him addressing them. All I kept hearing was COVID, COVID, COVID. But like you said, the other things that leads to stress in our communities and generational stress, and I'm not even talking about that crime bill that he's offered, because that has devastated Black families. But you just talked about some of the things with this, those stats that I read off, poverty mm-hmm. levels, unemployment, those things, we don't have anything to be cheering about when you're talking about these two charlatans, clowns. We don't have anything. What kind of victory is it to have one plantation master over the other? What is that a victory? I mean, are you kidding me? I want our people to be free. Our ancestors wanted our people to be free. They running around. They had their black minions. They pulled Obama out from under the carpet or rug. And then he went around rallying these black minions the last couple of weeks. Some of these misleadership class, telling them to get the people out and vote. We got to get Trump out of there. That's all they were saying, Richard. I didn't hear no messages from this misleadership class. We're gonna do this. We want that. I didn't hear it. They're supposed to be your leadership. All they was talking about was we got to get Trump out of there. I mean, did you hear any other message?
And that's the point. And is that because we're not the general we being caught up in the media frenzy of that, you know, this here horse race, you know, or demonization on one side and, you know, yeah, he, you know, bad, but he's better on the other side.
What kind of logic is that logic? I mean, is that sensible? Oh, he's better than the other guy. He might not be. He's the lesser of two evils. He's better than what? What are you talking about? And you know what? You gave an analogy of a sports game that it feels like you're watching this, and it was kind of ironic because I was putting together a new collage of different voices, and especially centered around what we've been dealing with the past month. And I'm going to play this before we go to our next caller. I see calling from Atlanta, been waiting, and I'm going to get him on. But let me play this, Richard, because it deals directly with what you just stated. Check out our elder, if I can get this thing queued up properly.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power. But the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political...
football.
Yeah, and I got kind of cut that off. But you see, Malcolm used the same analogy that you just used. And it's, you know, it's eerily, it's really eerie hearing Malcolm, that speech is 60 years old, and what he's saying about what they're doing is almost, is what we've been watching.
Engaging in. Feeding off of. People are anxiety ridden. I seen posting where people said they couldn't sleep trying to see the numbers come in. You know, fear.
Wow.
You know, that much fear wasn't going on. That much fear is not going on by the consistent, if you're saying, in these the urban areas, and we ain't even dealing with rural South areas, right? In numbers a lot of times, you know, which I would think is probably worse. And you can't even, I mean, how the water in Flint, you know, can come on and off in our public consciousness, that those children are drinking poison water right now.
Mm-hmm.
And been doing it for a while.
At least the past four years.
And there is no, I mean, and that's in between of watching the assaults, the intentional, even if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, real murders in the street, because people feel that it could have been handled a different kind of way in dealing with police aggression and solving even a domestic problem. I don't hear that kind of anxiety. Constant. I mean, if we had that kind of anxiety, this was before Trump. And those children are going to be affected generationally. I mean, they're them and their children, from what I understand, right? Because the water is so bad. The chemicals in it. There's no talk. When you talk about 25, 35% in poverty.
Now, wait a minute, Rich. You just gave the example of Flint. Now, that was uncovered, what was going on in Flint while Obama was still president.
Right.
Nothing has really been done.
Drink the water.
Yeah. Nothing has really been done about it since Trump's been in office. Nothing's going to be done about it if this other guy gets in office. So that's what I'm saying. The real things that we're dealing with, these people ain't concerned about doing anything. And the black minions that they put out there, they just use, just like Michael was just saying, they use these things to win political seats and use our people. And I'm talking about the people at the grassroots level, some of the people that I was just reading off, they ain't statistics, but that are contained in some of them statistics. The 25% poverty rate in a lot of these cities, the 15, 16, 20%. Unemployment rate. That's the folks that they was telling to get to the polls. Your ancestors died for the right to vote. Did it what? Say that again. And they went. They did.
And another generation too. I mean, they're saying, I mean, I don't know. I don't see the numbers, but the perception I'm getting is that the millennials and the Generation Zs, they came out.
Yeah, well, I don't know, you know, as far as the numbers of that. That's what they say. But I guess some people did come out. They got, you know, that put this guy over the hump. But, I mean, the guilt trip that they was using about our people dying for the right to vote. I mean, our people died under this man and under this system that we've been living under, this oppressive system. I don't care what our people was doing, they was being murdered. If they went for certain jobs, they was getting slaughtered or hung from trees. If they tried to buy a house, if they tried to have a farm, if they tried to open a business, if they tried to go to school, don't just limit it to, oh, they died for the right to vote. Our people wanted freedom from this foolishness and this trauma, like you stated. To narrow this down, talking about how people die for the right to vote and you don't do anything about it, you're a traitor. Come on, man. Talk to somebody that don't know our people's struggles here in their history. Don't come with that old weak argument with me.
And it just becomes, you know, again, that's why I'm really adamant to interject, because our political, our discourse within our common, I ain't saying we got to be, political scientists. I ain't saying we got to be participating in the data and stats, you know, and being able to, bring the numbers to the table. I'm just saying that we have to be able to raise our political dialogue maturity to a level where we are asking, what is the policy, that what is the plan that will address this that we know for a fact? What is the chemical company that is going to put together the virus that we're going to have to either be directed and dictated to in order to deal with a virus, you know, whether we have a health plan that pays for it enough. What is the policy that will allow us to have, not to have food deserts to where we cannot have healthy food so that our immune system can be at least at a level so that our propensity when the virus affects us is not so devastating because of our health condition. That's what they told us. A large part of the virus took out a large part of us, young and old. Yes, maybe primarily, but I mean, 40, 50 ain't old.
Yeah, because of pre-existing conditions.
And, you know, what is it? And when we're talking about most of the children, the consideration about school or not school is because a lot of them already have asthma, so they need to have medication. So they don't even have a nurse there for them. So they can't work out a plan to be in that kind of environment, supposedly a virus-induced environment, when they already have health conditions that they're coming to the public school system with.
And Richard, go ahead, finish your thought.
Because of their condition.
And if you're living in the poverty rate of 25%, like is the average one in these black neighborhoods in these cities, you're not getting the proper fruits and vegetables that's going to build your immune system. You're not getting the proper foods, period. I mean, let's see what the folks have to say in reference to, before I do that, and then Carla been waiting out of Atlanta, hold on 1 second. Let me play this, Richard. This is part of some of the things I'm putting up here. Something that Kwame Ture said, if I can get it, find it. Here it is.
Since the 60s, you will see nothing but betrayals by the petty bourgeois elements in our society. The African bourgeoisie is the most corrupt bourgeoisie in the world. In Africa, they seek luxury in the midst of mass suffering. There are more Mercedes in Africa than in any other continent in the world. In America, as soon as they arrive at a position based on the blood of the people, they snatch that position and run away from the people. But you must not think that they represent the people. They only represent their opportunistic self, using the people every step of the way. So you must not be confused. The petty bourgeoisie everywhere will be running for cover, but the masses will spare them not. Consequently, we who have dedicated our lives to the people's struggle, we who knowing that the people will always be free, we understanding that we must make a contribution to qualify our struggle since the 60s, have been dedicating all our energies to only one task, the organization of the masses of our people. We are not running for mayor. We're not running for president. No changes can come from the top down. We're not stupid. Changes can only come from the bottom up. The masses and the masses alone can make them. If you want to learn something from the 60s, the lesson is simple. Organize the masses of the people. Thank you.
Any comment before I go to the calls, Richard?
No, it's all true. I mean, it's true. And maybe I'll weave in just as we was thinking about it, because it touches on, again, you know, when I was thinking about this voting and the turnout, this North Star convention they had here, September, October, and what that meant as far as that as Brother Kwame said, that petty bourgeois class who are a part of the political establishment, what is it that they are, you know, what policy are they looking at to deal with these conditions?
Let's go to 404.
Y'all hear me?
No. Your voice is, it sound like you, where you at?
I'm right here in the great state of Georgia, man. You hear me now?
I hear you a little better now.
Yeah, man. Hey, before I get to Georgia, man, a brother just sent me an article from the Gateway Pundit. And in Pennsylvania, Trump was leading at election night Tuesday. And then Biden to come up with more votes in Pennsylvania. And what the article saying, a whistleblower say the post office was picking up, dropping ballots, mail-in ballots, and they post-dated it back to November the 3rd, man. I sent y'all the article, man. I DM y'all at Time for Awakening, man.
So I just I'm on the line.
Oh, yeah, well, that brother on the line right there, he can explain it better than me probably because he sent me the article.
Hey, yeah, I'm on the line.
Okay, brother, we'll get to you. Finish your thought.
Yeah, yeah. So it's from the Gateway Pundit. It's dated, man, like from the day of yesterday, man. It's dated. Anyway, I sent it to y'all. And they're saying now that's why Biden up in Philadelphia. But I sent y'all the article. I want y'all to read it. If y'all ever heard it, y'all aware of that. Saying some whistleblower.
Yeah, what difference does that make, to be honest? What difference does it make?
Oh, well, I'm just sharing information, bro. You know it's all crooked. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's okay. All right.
It don't make no difference to me, man. Because, okay. See, Philadelphia and Georgia, both of them original 13 damn colonies. So, where I see that in Georgia, we were doing good down here till 1735. The so-called Queen George brought them devils over here. So it don't make no difference to me, bro. Win or lose, I don't know devils, man. I just like to share information, man. You know who I am, man.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I understand. Okay.
And see, getting back to that brother, Malik, L.E. Shabazz, Malcolm X. He was smart, his smart brother, and Frederick Douglass. So both of them said the same thing. The number one group that's most detrimental to black people are these white liberals, man. It's all a game, man. Electoral college pick who they want anyway. Like I said, as far as I know, me and my people, we were surviving back when old George Washington. We survived number one. So whoever 46 is, we going to prosper and multiply, man. That's from the ancestors, my brother.
You know let me say this in reference to what you just said about the number one enemy of our people is white liberals.
Mm-hmm.
We know historically that Europeans have been the number one enemy for blacks, especially since we've been over here or since we came in contact with them. But running very close, and especially now, see, I'm dealing with now.
Yes, sir.
Running very close is that black misleadership class.
Definitely.
They tiptoeing on the fence. They're the offensive line, or if you use a sports analogy, they're the offensive line that's stopping the people from getting to the quarterback. They get marching orders, and then they come out here among the people and stir them up to go any direction that they want, almost like you're on a cattle drive. You ever seen them old Westerns when they're on a cattle drive?
That's right.
And they get them to run in certain directions, steer them towards this, steer them towards that. That's what they're almost like cowboys in a cattle drive.
That's right.
But our people are not sheep, and they're not cattle, and we shouldn't be acting like that.
That's right. That's why I think for myself, man. I don't follow nobody.
Well, I'm not just talking about you as a person, as a personality.
I agree. And the hardest thing that for me is to try to get our people to wake up out of this damn funk before they be led to slaughter. But like we already discussed, whoever is running this crap, they're going to come up with that vaccine, and then they're going to start taking us out by taking that vaccine, man, these Negroes, man. But anyway, it's a fun time to be alive, man. Bro, I'm just trying to keep our people woke, man, but it's rough, man, sometimes, man. But I let somebody else talk, man. I won't squeeze the mic too much, bro. I'm glad y'all on tonight. And I'm enjoying the show.
Talk to you.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Okay, now.
Let's go to 804. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's your name, brother?
My name is Brother Bernard. How you doing, sir?
How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad that you, because I sent him the article.
Okay.
And what I was letting you know was that, yeah, like, a lot of the process has not been legitimate, but the thing that's getting me more is that you got black women that say, oh, we went to HBCU, and I was in what you said is this blackness leadership class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been talking about it for a while, you know, take cover and isolate from. I've even made comments on Facebook with them, got me put in Facebook jail. Leave them on an island by themselves, and let's distance ourselves from these people quick, fast, and hurry before they try to take us down in the boat. Even in Dillard University, and I think another thing in two colleges in Texas, I think, and some black ministers is trying to get black people to do COVID-19 trials. What the hell is going on? Well, I do know what's going on. I ain't taking no goddamn trial. I ain't no motherfucking guinea pig, man. What the hell? You know? So, as a matter of fact, they ain't even been talking about COVID since the election, because they show you right there it was all bull crap anyway. Just a false flag to get you to feel like you take a vaccine. But the vaccination thing actually is very, very critical, because I think they about to come up with a more devious plan to stop prohibiting travel in D.C. They said if you come to D.C. from another state, unless you're in Virginia and Maryland, they're going to actually, you know, tell you to quarantine yourself when you're in the district.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're getting real tricky with this thing now, you know. So we just got to be aware of what's up. But they are, I mean, the zeitgeist is coming, man. Look, people talk about the NBA starting back on December 22nd. You better worry about what happened this winter when they might try to pull out this real called Operation Dark Winter.
Operation what?
Dark Winter.
Hmm. Which is what?
That's a bioterrorism exercise. It's a script they ran in 2001. They might be getting ready to run it again. When Biden was talking in the debate, he said that it's going to be a dark winter. You can go back and look it up. That's coded language, man. But what I'm saying is they got a lot of games they pull off, man. You know, a lot of this stuff, like I tell people, get out of the goddamn matrix. Government is a script. They script this thing. I mean, it ain't no coincidence. Like, I'm just using coincidence. Like, Trump got Supreme Court justice, and now he's talking about going to Supreme Court. I knew that was going to happen before that. Like, with the COVID thing, I knew that they was going to come with the vaccines anyway, because Bill Gates been talking about this for years, that he wanted to push vaccinations. Matter of fact, he's been doing it in another country. So, I mean, I'm like that Brother West, man. You know, you try to educate people, it's kind of hard, man, because they too stuck on bull crap like NFL, NBA, what I'm going to do today and tomorrow. Man, come on, man. These guys checking up on this information. The worst part, you got the information on your phone, but you might not have it that much longer, because Facebook is now blocking anything that's they call misinformation. Who tell you is misinformation? Who you make you the judge, jury, and excuse?
Really?
That's all you know. I got.
Thank you for your contribution, man.
Yes, sir.
Talk to you soon. Let's take a break. In fact, no. Let's go to our next call, and then we'll take a break after that. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Good evening,
up,
Brother
man?
Martin.
How are you, sir?
Yes. I'm doing great, good brothers. You know, it's kind of ironic because, you know, the reason I came to this country was because of political unrest that was instigated by this United States. Because in 1980, when we had that Michael Manley's government in Jamaica, the U.S. sent down ton loads of M16 rifles and vehicles to destabilize that country. So black folks were shooting each other in the name of politics, you know, JLP killing PNP. Now the chicken has come home to roost. It's made a full circle and came right back here.
Mm-hmm.
In America. So now you see Republicans are fighting Democrats, people, you know, shooting, killing each other because there was a couple of stabbings, you know, that took place in Phoenix. So this thing is going to intensify. It's not going to get any better. But you see, the powers that be, they had to get rid of Trump. Because, you see, Trump was waking up too much black folks. You see, too many black folks was eyes were getting open. And then, as quiet as it kept, there is a large contingent of black folks moving out of America, moving to the motherland. So they say, the powers that be, the globalists say, we can't allow that to happen. We have to stop that. We don't want them black folks over there from America talking about back to Africa. No, we need them to stay here, focus here while we could rip off Africa. You see? So that's what I fear now because of this. They came in now, black folks going to get complacent. See, we're going to say, oh, yes, everything is all right. You know, you see, that's the complacency. You know, these people are clever, you know. They're not stupid. You see, they're not stupid people. So it's all a game. The liberal, the conservative, they just use black people as a buffer. Those liberals just use black people as the buffer between them and the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, because they know if we weren't here, that hatred would turn on them. See? So they said, no, we got to keep the black folks here in America, keep them in this vacuum. They let them feel that it's gonna get better for you, black folks. Don't worry, just keep waiting. Another 100 years. And it's going to get better. No. But you know what? As I said, this is just the beginning. It ain't going to get no better. Especially with this rift now, it's only going to intensify. So, you know, as they say down south here, brother, it is what it is. Anyway, good brothers. Thank you so much for this program.
You know, before you leave, Brother Marcus, to kind of come behind what you're saying. If you look at the quote unquote popular vote, it's razor thin on both sides.
Yep. On both sides.
So that should be sending our people a message. You know, some of our people run around, oh, we got him out of there, we got him out of there, like that's a victory. But some of our people ought to realize what they're going to be dealing with. And I'm talking about this stuff that they're going to, but some of our people might end up leaving for their children, because you got a population here, an American population, predominantly white,
mm-hmm.
that was almost a 50-50 split for both of these guys.
Exactly.
And the thing to realize that a lot of the whites that voted against Trump for Biden, they only voted against him because of his image and how he portrays himself.
Exactly.
Whites don't want to be seen like that, some type of bombastic idiot. They want to be seen like this, you know, stately and use the term presidential. They don't want to seem like a village fool. And they see him as shooting from the hip and a fool. So they don't like that image. That's the only reason they didn't vote for him. Other than that, he would have won by a landslide.
If this virus didn't hit, he would have been a shoo-in. If this virus didn't slow his behind down, it would have been a shoo-in. And can you see how much? You see, almost the entire the midsection and down south here, the country is all red. You see, it's all red. So a lot of these people voted for him.
Well,
so a lot of them have his mindset.
If you notice, the campaign approach is they were appealing to the quote unquote white public about his handling of this virus.
Exactly.
Black minions was told to appeal to black folks about we got to get him out of there at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
It was two different messages sent. I didn't hear no foreign policy, no domestic policy besides little stuff here and there. Oh, I might get rid of Social Security, this and that. But the main message was his handling of the virus. And for black folks, it was, we got to get him out of there.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay.
I hear you.
All right. Yeah, that was the two separate messages. One was to the general white population about this virus and the handling of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, the message by black minions to black folks all around the country in these major cities is we got to get him out of there.
Yep, because he didn't want to, he don't want to shut down the country, you know. You see, because if you hear what he say, I don't want to shut down the country. I don't want to live in a basement. And
you don't want to live in a basement.
Yeah, but with Biden, you know, they may shut down the country because they may say, you know what, we got to get this pandemic under control, so we got to shut down the country. You see, so and when they do that, that's when it's going to hit the fan because, you know, them white folks, they out there in Arizona and them place down south here with them guns in the Midwest, they're going to pick up their guns. They ain't going, you see. So this ain't over. It's just the beginning. You see, it's the calm before the storm. So, you know, because I said it. It's happening already. You know, people getting stabbed up, people getting, you know, I hear no shout up, but a couple of people got stabbed down there, I think, in Arizona. You know, a couple of GOP people got stabbed. So it's ready to turn up. It's ready to turn up, you know. So, you know, and then we have the economic problems too, you know. So it's a myriad of problems converging at one time. You know, so, you know, hey, the worst is yet to come. I still say that, you know. But as I say it again, it is what it is, brother. So, you know, you just got to do what we got to do.
Thank you for your contribution. No, go ahead, Richard. What you say?
No. I just, there's one thing that when you were mentioning about the foreign policy that, like, really get me because gets to me, in hearing our maturity, right? Our political maturity. Because we know really the only major policy position that the office of president holds is in relationship to the military, right? I mean, that's really the president's, about the dealing with social and economics, that's the Congress role, right? But in relationship to what the president role is about, foreign policy. And as you said, you heard no foreign policy initiative.
None.
And then when you talk about the Congress, you know, and I'm stuck on stupid on this. Larry Sumner, who was Obama's economic advisor, his major thing was that he called it structural stagnation. That this American economy and from 08 seeing the Western economy does not produce enough jobs for white males
mm-hmm.
white males who educational attainment is high school and below. It's just, and therefore, and the population is growing and their disenchantment is growing. But they haven't figured out, because of the shift, call it the fourth industrial revolution, they haven't figured out, because they can't bring them back those, even they talk about Clinton, you know, and NAFTA and all that, but the jobs that they had, those manufacturing jobs that they had, their fathers had, don't exist and will never exist no more. Now we're talking about the black unemployment, you know, within our community. Now when they had jobs, we had unemployment levels in the 60s hitting at 40% and 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They had factory jobs. Now they don't. Their children don't. And they don't have, and they didn't, in these towns, and if you look at all those red states that when y'all said about the 50-50, look where they are, in the Midwest. What was the Midwest major thing? Farming and factories.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys ain't working. And they knew that was a challenge for them. They know it's a challenge for them. And look who comes, who appeals to them and shakes up the apple cart. But the point that you made, Elliot, in relationship bringing up foreign policy, because if anybody goes to the Foreign Affairs magazine for September, October 2020, Foreign Affairs, the world Trump made, they lay out, or at least one of this policy analyst, Nadia Shalom, Trump's foreign policy is basically what they were moving to go and have to go into anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So what he was raising, what had to deal with, they were going to have to deal with that anyway. So the increase of one of the major linchpin, that was a big thing, right? The increase of the military budget. That F-35, which was, you know, they were saying was a big, what they call it, a disaster, but they kept feeding it. So, you know, that's what I'm saying as far as, you know, like how we, that has nothing to do with him being the boogeyman when these working whites, working white males, and as y'all said, they came out again, right? These working white males who are saying they are afraid of what they're going to do, and we're seeing what they're going to do. They strapping up, and they calling them militia. But they was going to strap up anyway, because they still don't have no challenge for them. They strapped up and they gave them, well, we're going to give them what they always do, right? The boogeyman or the black man. Black people. And media is pushing that. So I'm just saying, I just felt that, you know, like if what you said as far as if we were focusing on policy, because then we would be asking a question, what policy Biden, because I don't hear no policy that's addressing the unemployment in the black community. I don't hear no policy.
No, they didn't have any.
You know, even that platinum plan, that's not addressing the type of unemployment that is occurring in the black community.
Oh, that was the platinum plan was Bush's, Trump's. I forgot what his was. He had another plan. All of them had plans for the black community.
It's not addressing. So that's on my riff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's one thing that, because if you remember, Richard, and Brother Marcus, thanks for your contribution, man.
All right, no problem.
All right, and Brother Marcus, let me, you know, you mentioned in the beginning of the conversation, I'm going to hold that thought, Richard. You mentioned at the beginning of the conversation about what happened when you before you came here in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
When what the U.S. was doing down there to depose a leader like of another money. Government.
Yeah.
Let me go something here. I'm going to play this that Amos Wilson said. Listen to what he said in this clip.
I am an African. The death of my brother is also my death. Let me put this question to you again, because many foolish black middle classes and many foolish people who are eating well think that they can sit in America and watch this country destroy the African continents, and watch this country destroy African Caribbeans, and watch this country destroy Africans in Central and South America, and think that these same people who destroy Africans abroad will not be the same people who destroyed them in America. There are fools in this country who try to claim that they are not Africans, who claim that they do not see color, as if their not seeing color makes any difference in the world. Simply because you don't see color doesn't mean somebody does not see you as color. And that's the issue. And you think then that you can sit in this country while this same nation and these same people that you sleep with and marry and love and so forth can go out and destroy African people and not think those people do not see you as African. Even though you choose not to see yourself as African, you'd better think again. You're out of your minds and you're headed for death. You must understand that. Hide behind it. I am an American. Ladies and gentlemen, these death and destruction of black people will follow those kind of abstractions.
I just wanted to play that for you because it's true.
It
coincided with what you mentioned.
It's very profound. It's he could have seen it, and it's here. It's here. Anyway, thank you, good brothers.
Thank you for your call.
All right.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We still got a couple calls on the line. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. It's 9:17, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Time for an Awakening.
Time for an Awakening
with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the largest independent black digital radio and podcasting platform. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations. to control your own products, ibibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometiu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometiu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now at ibibitumi.com, at ibibitumi.tv, at ibibitumitv.com, at ibibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
And I think we are in a new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we are getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid or thinking they're devoid of racism, do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality, and they are always looking for an excuse to go but so far.
Up, you mighty race. You can accomplish what you will. Build your future on these foundations: freedom, justice, and equality. What is the definition of freedom, justice, and equality for the black man, and where and when is it to be attained?
Well, take equality first. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't teach us to associate equality with whites. Equality has nothing to do with whites. We don't want to be equal with the white man. He's not the criteria or yardstick by which equality is measured. He's not in a position to tell us we are equal. It's not his right. It's not his to do. Equality, we want equality. We had equality before the white man was created. We had equality before the white man came into existence. And we want equality whether the white man is on this earth or not. Equality means the opportunity to develop all of our dormant potential, all of our dormant capability. In developing this dormant capability, the right and the ability to stand on this earth on some land of our own and bring about a civilization and a society in which we will be completely independent, complete freedom to take care of the needs, to take care of the wants and the likes and the dislikes of our people. To establish our own nation, our own society, our own heaven, our own future. This is what we mean by freedom, by equality. And justice means, as you sow, so shall you reap. If you do wrong, you'll get wrong in return. And if you do right, you'll get right in return. When you're in your own nation, in your own land, you're in a position to get justice. But when you're in another man's country, in another man's land, under another man's flag and under another man's government and under another man's court system, you have to look to that other man for justice, and you'll never get it. And Negroes in this country probably are authorities on that.
Because, now listen carefully now, America has to pay for the sins that she has committed, the genocide of the native people, the transatlantic slave trade that brought us here, the lynchings, the brutality, the killing of us without any thought of justice coming to us. You think that God is pleased? The system of white supremacy rules the political, educational, spiritual, cultural, economic, legal, whatever you want. White supremacy is ruling. So don't get it twisted.
One black man believes in violence. One believe in integration. One believe that one day after we all marry white women, we'll all be a light brown color and there'll be no problem. One believes that if we get enough politics and education, we can take over the country and be the mayor and the president. One believe, such as I, that separating on some land will solve it, cleaning up our own neighborhoods, respecting our own women, and doing something for ourselves and quit begging white people. This is our solution.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening.
Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Again, welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:26 here in the city of Philadelphia, and you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Richard, I'm going to go right on to the phones unless you had a comment.
No.
All right, let's go to 215-215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Victor. How y'all brothers doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. All praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Elliot, I want to say first, I thank you for that collage you played just now, Brother Malcolm, Minister Farrakhan, Brother Muhammad Ali, and stuff, man. That was a nice, and of course, Dr. King earlier. That was nice collage of stuff from our ancestors, man. Just beautiful stuff. So let me say first, before I talk about the election, Elliot, and stuff, I want to, give my heartfelt condolences for the family of Brother Rob, like I said, who made transition the other week and stuff, and was a supporter of Time for an Awakening and the listener and everything. And I want to give my condolences to Brother Rob's family. May Allah be pleased with him. And as Brother Rob became an ancestor, and I know Sister Sarah and Brother Kit and all of them who know Brother Rob, I know that my hearts go out to y'all and everything. And I just want to share that with the Time for the Awakening of listening family and stuff around the country. You know, Elliot, before I talk about the election, when you played our other ancestor, Kwame Ture, it made me think, harking back to about 20 years ago, I had the honor and privilege of breaking bread with Brother Kwame Ture. I was sitting right next to him at Brother Gabel and Sister Jamis. They members of the All African Revolutionary Party, and they hosted a dinner for Brother Kwame in Philadelphia at their home at their Midas Row home in Southwest Philadelphia. And just being next to that Brother Elliot and Rich in the top, we can listen when it's just, you know, he just down home playing folks, man. You know, I'm sitting next to this brother who just was an icon and among our people, and just sitting there eating with him, man, and just he telling me stories about, you know, his in a struggle and stuff, dealing with people like the John Lewis's of the world and Dr. King and people like that. It was mesmerizing, man. I mean, that's one moment, Ellen Richard, that I'll treasure. I'm 59 years old. If I live to be 159, I'll always harken back to that night when I had the chance to break, when I had the honor of breaking bread with Brother Kwame Ture, who's now an ancestor. You know, I just wanted to share that with y'all real quick, you know.
Oh, okay.
And on the police thing, I'm going to say the election for last. I don't know if you and Richard had the chance to see the current issue, the final call. One of the current issues, I think it's the October 3rd. I got two of them today anyway. The brother dropped me off two from the FOI. Well, anyway, on one of them, they're talking about how black police officers and black and Latino police officers are disciplined way more disproportionately than their white counterparts. No surprise there. and they was talking about cases after case where Baker had the same number of complaints against them. In some cases, the white officer had more brutality, but it's the black officer that gets punished the most, the black. And in other cases, the Latino officer that get punished the most. And Elliot, you remember when you and Brother Richard interviewed the beautiful sister from Buffalo, New York, Cal Horn, who lost her job from Buffalo? And I love that sister because they interviewed her for the article, and she said she don't regret nothing. She says that a job is not worth your life. She said because I know had I intervened when that white criminal, that white thug of a police officer had that black man in the chokehold in Buffalo, New York, which I've been to many times with my sister and my niece and nephews, and many of my aunts and uncles live in Buffalo right now, which I've been to Buffalo, New York on several occasions. It were not for Sister Cal Horn intervening, and like she said, this white thug of a cop would have killed that black man. And she said she had to do it all over, she'd do the same thing again. And I'm saying to myself, now here's a black woman, that's a woman, a sister, who has the heart of her, the strength and courage of her conviction to do the right thing. And you get these punk Negro cops here in this city that can sit back here and watch a white man, white cops shoot their people down in the street, brutalize their people. They don't do a damn. They got the same gun, the same nightstick like the white devil cop got, and they don't do a damn thing. Here she's a sister, and she put herself on the line like that. You understand what I'm saying, Ellen Richard? The cowardness among these Negroes, they're a disgrace, some of them, you know. They make you sick, you know. And I just wanted to, you know, give a shout-out to Sister Cal Horn because, like I said, this sister, she did the right thing. It cost her job. It's a shame that none of these other black police came and supported that sister and fought for her, man, you know, because she did the right thing, you know.
But I know. She was a guest on the program a while ago and told her story.
That's right. That's right. And on the election, Ellie, you know, see, brother, you and Brother Richard, y'all good brothers have a knack for just saying stuff that's so timely about this election because, you know, again, in the final car issue, when we play Al Haj Malik Shabazz, better known to the world as Malcolm X, when Malcolm was saying how they play games with our people, the white liberal and the white conservatives, you know, how they use our people as pawns. Because in this article, Minister Farrakhan said that we live in such a toxic environment where this white man and our people allow themselves to be used. And you've seen yourself, Ellen and Richard, where black men being used against white men. I mean, black men against black women. Let me correct myself. Black men against black women against two devils instead of your devil better than my devil. Oh, this is crazy stuff. And like the minister said, we got such a toxic environment that if you question Joe Biden on what he's going to do, as far as if he be elected president, what is he going to do for black people? Then first thing the silly Negro says, Elliot or Richard, you supporting Trump. You know, you're an apologist for Trump. And like Minister Farrakhan said, nothing can be further from the truth. Nobody's supporting Trump, but you have to be questioning this man, what are you going to do? He getting 90% of the black vote. And like you and Richard just said, he has no plan for black unemployment. Like, for example, right now on the terrestrial radio show, Elliot and Richard, if you bring up the fact, well, okay, black people voted for Biden. Black people saved this sorry ass in South Carolina and stuff like that because his election was pretty much dead on arrival. And so the least black leadership, this misleadership class could say, well, Joe, since Sleepy Joe, as Trump would call him, since we helped put you over the top, we demand, we're not asking Mr. Biden, we demanding that you have an agenda for black people, especially for the address, like Brother Richard said, this severe unemployment problem that's plaguing black men and black women around the country. So if you bring this up on terrestrial radio and stuff here in Philadelphia, you hating on Biden, you supporting Trump, and I'm saying that's foolish talk. You know, why wouldn't you want to make demands on Biden? If you got the black vote, you should make demands on him. You know what I mean? See, this is the foolishness. But yet them same silly Negroes won't say a word when white people, especially the so-called white Jews, bring up about, well, if he gets in office, we want to make sure he continues the enhanced foreign policy with Israel, strengthen relations with Israel. The silly Negro that will question you about questioning Biden won't have nothing to say about that. You know what I mean? And as I shared with you, Brother Elliot, the other day, I think it was a National Public Radio where the moderator played a clip where Trump was had Benjamin Netanyahu on a conference call from the Oval Office over there to Israel. They was talking on the conference call, and you know, of course, Donald Trump was pumping his chest out about how he just was the first president to get the United Arab Emirates and all them, the Sudan, and make peace with Israel. He was just, you know, bragging. Of course, you know, he was being Donald Trump, you know. So anyway, Trump was calling Biden Sleepy Joe, and he was trying to get Benjamin Netanyahu to badmouth Joe Biden. But see, Netanyahu, who Trump refers to as BB, that's his nickname, that's a criminal's nickname, BB. So he was asking, he said, BB, now you know Sleepy Joe couldn't have did that. You know Sleepy Joe don't know what he's doing. He asleep at the wheel. He ain't too bright or whatever. So Trump was making all, and he was trying to get Netanyahu to join in, but Netanyahu didn't go for the bait because Netanyahu knows it's a good chance that Biden could lose this thing. So he's no fool. You know, like we always say, the American war machine is, and so it runs the way it's supposed to run. So whether Biden is in office or Trump is in office, Israel will still be a benefactor. And so Netanyahu realizes that. So Netanyahu is saying, why should I say something negative against Biden when I'm going to have to deal with this man? You know what I'm saying? So he ain't no fool. You know what I mean?
And that's one, and that's one reason, Joe, why a lot of whites voted for Trump, voted for mm-hmm. Biden, because mm-hmm. of what you just stated. See, they don't like that image going around the world where they sound like a second grader playing the dozens and talking about somebody and they're calling names and all that like he's in grade school.
Exactly.
They don't want that image going around like that. They want to stand up there and with their legs crossed and make all mm-hmm. kind of pontificating type of speeches. That's the image that they don't want no type of image like that. And they was a lot of these whites was tired of it. Not sure, that they disagree with his policies, because the foreign policy is the same. If you remember
exactly.
when Obama was running against Bush, they was in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they had just went into Afghanistan, if I'm not mistaken, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And all while he was campaigning, he going to pull the troops out of Iraq. That was one of the things he was stating.
That's correct.
Now, if you recall, he didn't pull the troops out of Iraq. They didn't come out of Afghanistan, and what he did was expand it into Africa when they was going into Somalia and all them other places, dropping bombs.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
So see, our people got to stop playing games. You know, this man is no kingmaker. He's no Jesus Christ. He's no savior. Right. He's been a liar to black people. He said that he was going to pull troops out of there, and they didn't. Now, if you mm-hmm. notice, when Trump took over, his troops are still in Iran, Iraq, and they're still in Afghanistan, and they're still on the continent.
That's right.
Now, you think it's going to change when Biden goes in?
No.
No, the foreign policy is the same. It's no difference between these two people. The only thing that's difference is this guy been in politics for 40-something years, and he's mm-hmm. a polished politician. He know how to say smooth lies. The other guy know how to say idiot lies and make himself look like a fool. The other guy know just say smooth lies and get a lot of people to swallow it.
That's right. And see, and add to that, Elliot, a couple more things, and I'll you know, try to make it get off. See, and again, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan said this too. I think this is all ties into what you just said. He says that we as black people, he said, when we question Joe Biden, since he may become the president-elect, he said we have an obligation to question him and don't be attacked by other black people accusing you of being a supporter of Trump. And I like how Minister Farrakhan put a period on it. He says, look, black folk, he says, why should we lose friendship over two white men? You know what I mean? Think about that, Elliot. That's not being nasty. That's just being truthful. He said, why should we as black people stop speaking to one another, being angry over two white men who don't really give a damn about our people?
Now, you said Minister Farrakhan said that?
You see this in the final call.
Well, wait a minute. Now, keep that thought, because Maxine Waters stated that she'll never forgive blacks that voted for Trump. Made that a public statement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's her name up there in New York? Ocasio-Cortez. What's her name?
AOC.
Yeah. Well, I know the initials, but
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Okay. Yesterday, I think, and I don't know whether you've seen it, Richard. Mm-hmm. She kind of admonished the Democratic Party for not campaigning among Latinos, because if you notice, Latino support for Trump went up even higher than it did in 2016. Mm-hmm. Now,
that's correct. And it's black support too, Elliot.
Well, wait a minute. I ain't talking about the blacks right now, because you knew the black support was going to go up, because he had both old and young minions that was pushing a lot of this stuff.
Right, right.
Former sports athletes, entertainers, and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't notice she didn't trash other Latinos. She didn't call them traitors, call them names. She trashed the Democratic Party. She knew that her people turned around and voted for Trump. She ain't trashed them. She ain't say nothing like Maxine Waters talking about, I'll never forgive nobody. See, come on, our people got to stop with the foolishness.
I agree. And for the record, that's why I have a lot of respect for AOC, because she knows what time. She knows
I ain't talking about the respect part. I'm talking about she didn't trash her people. I ain't even respect. I don't care one way or the other what she does. But all I'm saying is she didn't trash
her. She has a pulse of what's going on there, because I'm going to tell you why I said it. And I have to say this for the clarity, because when she was interviewed I think saying that about a week ago, she was saying stuff that black politicians should be saying when they was questioning her about the Democrat Party and Joe Biden. She said, well, you know, he wasn't my first choice, but she says, you know, I'll deal with him. But she said, I got some serious issues with him and Nancy Pelosi. I mean, you ain't heard that. She said, I got some serious issues with them. So I said, a lot of their policies that I don't like, and I'm going to challenge them on it. And I'm saying, where's our black politician to say that? That's my point, Alex. Where's our black politician to be bold and say that? You know what I mean? And that's what she's like. She's not going to be no mouthpiece for Biden or Kamala Harris. You know, she's going to challenge them when she sees fit. And I'm saying, where's our black politicians to do that, you know?
That's another level of where our discussion, the maturity of our discussion has to go. Because, you know, she comes out of a social, political, organizational structure.
Mm-hmm.
We have no social political organizational structure. Cultural. I mean, you know, not saying we didn't have, and I want to be clear. I mean, those towns we talk about, we celebrate, you know, as exemplar, you know, they had social, political, economic structures, and they produced. Even those politicians after Reconstruction, they came out of social, political, economic structure. That's what those terrorist groups went after.
Mm-hmm.
And when they went after them, if that structure was so integrated to where they had towns that was effectively creating, producing economic wealth for the town, which therefore all the people in it, they terrorized, they burnt down the town and scattered the people. Today, we don't have that. And we don't make our analysis from that perspective. So we have a bunch of individuals who are, you know, now the cliche is they trying to get a bag.
Mm-hmm.
And they're being supported by a group historically who would prefer them to be just individuals getting a bag. Even I heard today they might have spent $1 billion on this election.
Mm-hmm.
to get out the vote. And I don't know about other times, but I know I can't remember no time, and I know at the other times there might not have been cell phones, how many text messages I got, how many phone calls I got, how many personal letters I got in my mailbox, how many posters I got, how many people came and knocked on my door. Now, and I don't think a lot of them, now there was some, because I seen the image, you know, locally, where they had, you know, brothers who were in prison or coming out of prison. And I hate to use it, you know, that were supposedly soliciting younger brothers who, you know, because they can be able to culturally relate to them. Well, they weren't doing that for free.
Of course. Right?
So I'm saying we're not talking about, when we can make a comparison, there is no comparison at this moment.
And that's the problem. And you're absolutely right, Richard. See, that's the problem and stuff. Because, see, like I said before, a lot of our people are political. See, that's why
they keep our people. When she got AOC, can say what she says about challenging Biden and Nancy Pelosi and that Democrat power structure, and you got our black politicians being pretty much weak-kneed and spineless and just mouthpieces for the Democrat Party. See, that's and they keep our people in a state of political ignorance and stuff, man. That's why, and this is why, like, for example, right now, black folks, when you talk about the unemployment thing and stuff that Biden has not addressed, in the black misleadership class is not putting no pressure on him to address this. And so all our people right now, we so hyped up on getting rid of Trump that we all just going to go right over top of our heads by black suffering going to still happen, black unemployment, black people being murdered at the hands of the police, all them things going to still go undealt with and stuff because we just so happy Trump is out here, but the same thing's going to be happening. That's what will be happening under Biden as opposed to happening under Donald Trump. And this is kind of foolishness, Brother Richard, that we have got to address and deal with, man. We can't keep on going on this same dead end and expect something different like that, like Einstein said about insanity. The definition of insanity is to keep doing the same damn thing over and over again and expect a different result. And I close these last couple of comments. When you mentioned about, you and Alec was talking about the school thing of the nurses and stuff. See, again, these sorry-ass black politicians in this city and these white schools here in the city and definitely out in the white suburbs and stuff, these schools have nurses. We pay taxes just like white folks pay, but yet they took nurses. You'd be hard-pressed to find a nurse in these schools in the hood, so to speak. You know what I mean? They done took out music and the trades and things like that in a lot of these schools, but yet in these white schools in the suburbs and stuff right here within the city limits, they got nurses, they have everything that these children need to be successful, white kids, but yet we pay taxes, but yet these sorry Negroes don't do anything for our people. And I have to, and Ellie, remember when Sister Paula Peoples jumped on Dale Clark back here, Ellie, when we played the clip on the air?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll close with this, Elliot. Leon Williams called me up the other night and stuff, and he let me hear on his phone. I don't know, and I meant to mention to you earlier today, Elliot, they had a protest outside Dale Clark's North Philadelphia home because, you know, the Negro got a house here in North Philly and stuff in his district because that's his house that he justifies to be a city council person. But he also has a big home over in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Well, he was at his home in North Philadelphia the other day. I guess he's staying close to the city because of the election and everything going on. So a group of black activists gathered around his house because Leon was live streaming on Facebook. And this is what they were saying about Dale Clark. They were saying, get out of here and face us, you coward, and stuff. They said, get out here and face us. You're a disgrace to the community. And I even heard one of the brothers said to him, bring your punk ass out the house and face us like a man. This is what they said to the city council president.
Yeah, well, they need to do more of that. Yeah, our people need to do more of that with all of them.
That's right. That's right. And so he, of course, the coward wouldn't come out of the house. And as you know,
he didn't come out. I'm surprised he didn't call the police.
I know I am too, Brother Elliot. And here's the kicker. You know, he was getting a lot of FaceTime today because they was talking to Hellman Kenny and the city commissioner about the election at the convention center. But he was running his mouth, you know, pumping his chest out and everything like that. But my point is that they confronted him and they were saying the same things about him being a disgrace, the same thing that Sister Paula Peoples said when she confronted him. And that's why I say I blame people like the Dow Clarks of the world and the Curtis Jones of the world, because these Negroes have been sitting up in city council for years, and yet our schools are not equipped the way white schools are, and that's a disgrace. And so I'm saying going into 2021, how long is we as a people, Alan, Brother Richard, we're going to keep taking that nonsense, we're going to keep taking that unfair treatment where our children are going to run down schools with not running water, with not tissues in a bathroom, not up-to-date textbooks. How long are we as black folks going to put up when we got these Negroes in city council? You got predominantly black city council, but our schools are going to hell in the handbasket. Our neighbors got food deserts and stuff. I don't hear nothing about no Donald Trump. Donald Trump ain't doing that. Y'all sorry Negroes doing that. I know Donald Trump the devil. I don't need y'all to tell me he's bad, but hell, you can't blame Donald Trump for that. He ain't the one that y'all Negroes been in office way before Donald Trump even thought about running for president, and our schools been looking like a disgrace, and y'all and you and I had all these black politicians in city council on a city level, on a state level, on a federal level. Come on with this nonsense, man. We need to stop this foolishness, man.
That's Democratic or Democratic leadership.
Yes,
they ain't under repugnant or Republican. I said repugnant. That's they ain't right. under repugnant leadership. That's Democratic leadership.
Exactly. And that's my point. We got to start holding these Negroes accountable. This, like you correctly said, this black misleadership class, because that's exactly what it is. And as far as Sister Maxine goes, like I said, I don't know what has happened to that sister. She has did a lot for our people, but like I said, it seems like her and her husband got involved in that banking scandal. She was part of that banking committee, and they got them they on her. She even said some stuff that I just don't, you know, because first, Maxine, she knows she's wrong for saying that. She needs to make an apology to the community because they call us people traitors, and she can't forget them and stuff. I mean, I'm saying, come on, Sister Maxine, you know better than that. You know better. I mean, that's something that you just need to look within yourself, Sister Maxine, and issue an apology. I understand you're emotional and you're upset about what's going on with Trump. I get all that, but because everybody know he's bad, but so is Biden is bad. So don't say that about your people. Now, if you would have said, well, I think black people should vote for Biden, if that's what her opinion, that's her opinion. But to sit there and call somebody a traitor because they vote for another white man over another one, come on, Maxine, you know better than that. You just know better. But I ain't going to take up too much of your time. Ellie, thank you and Richard for your time.
Now, listen, before you go off, let me mention this. Me and Richard, I talked about it before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember when Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd and the sister in Louisville, when they got murdered, it all happened almost basically in a month's time.
That's correct.
Murders
happened. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And black people were fed up because they've been fed up with this foolishness. So they wanted these police prosecuted for murder because these police generally, when that stuff happens, they don't get prosecuted. You know, they was afraid for their life and they'll be on destitute for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them might get fired. Then they just go to another department and work somewhere else.
That's right.
So blacks wanted these killer cops prosecuted for murder. But then when white folks started getting involved in these demonstrations, the narrative about defunding police start going around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I never heard any grassroots people talking about defunding the police. Now, here's where I mentioned before about these white liberals get their black minions to have the masses of black people follow them down a blind alley. Now, you got an incident that just came up here about 2 weeks ago in Philadelphia where a young man with mental problems got gunned down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the police commissioner comes on television in a press conference because the people start saying, you know, where was the, they get on the scene and in less than 2 minutes, this man is killed.
That's right.
They said, where's the tasers or something? If they want to tase, they should have tased the man. So she comes on TV and I know you heard it, Richard. She said, we got 4,600 police officers in Philadelphia police force. And 2,300 of them have tasers.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have enough tasers. So where does that leave this defund the police? Because if the black community want these people to have tasers, then how are they going to defund the police? And you got blacks that's on the appropriations committee for this city of Philadelphia and city council. They know how much the police department gets from the city. And they should have an accounting of what it's going for.
There you go.
If you're black, you know that all of these cops ought to have some type of tasers or to all have body cams. If she turn around and say, oh, we only got 2,300 tasers and it's 4,600 cops, then who do you look at? Who is it? Mm-hmm. See, that's what I'm saying about these black and white elected officials. Although I don't put nothing back. Yeah, I'm not holding them accountable because they don't care nothing about you anyway. But I'm talking about these black ones. They're sitting up there. They appropriate this money. They ain't conscious of what's going on. They're asleep at the wheel, or they don't care. Now, I don't think it's that they don't care. I mean, I don't think it's that they sleep at the wheel. I think they don't care.
Let me say this last thing, and I go to Brother Jay and everybody else to get on. Remember, like I said, the late Elijah Cummings, the former congressman from Maryland, who was there out there for almost 20-something years as congressman for Baltimore. Now, a lot of black folks got upset with Trump. And we know Trump was standing to be nasty, but it's not the point about him being. It's about truth, whether it's coming from a bigot or not. Truth is truth. If a bigot tell me that a rattlesnake behind me And I heard a snake hissing. I can't sit there and get upset and don't listen to him because he's a bigot. Because if I have a snake behind me, I got to be smart enough to make sure I don't get bit. So that's not the point whether you're bigger than that. So when Trump said, well, Elijah McCormick, you know, you've been out there in Maryland for all those years, and yet your home city of Baltimore looked like a rat-infested hellhole and everything. Black people jumped up and called Trump a racist. I'm saying to myself, well, that was stupid because I'm saying to myself, let's be a jury and look at the facts. This man been in office all those years. He has access to federal dollars. He grew up in, he's a native of Baltimore, and he's sitting there, and the whole time he's been in office, and he got access to federal dollars. He didn't institute no modern-day Marshall Plan to rebuild that neighborhood and where black people have decent housing and improve the schools. So you got to ask yourself, was Trump telling the truth? No matter what his intentions was, he told the truth. What the hell was he doing all those years but enriching himself? And then here's the kick, Elliot. He going to sit there and tell you how bad – and he gonna sit there and call Trump a racist and other blacks that came to his defense called Trump a racist. But here's the kicker, Ellen Richard, and for this time frame, we can listen to all this. Guess who was Elijah Cummings' best buddy and stuff in Congress? That racist Mark Meadows, who was Donald Trump's chief of staff. So I'm saying myself, hold up here. am I stupid or what? I mean, you think I'm lying? That he did the eulogy at Elijah Cummings' funeral.
Mark Meadows?
Mark Meadows, let's say, who was caught on tape making racial slurs, right? But yet he was Elijah Cummings' buddy, though. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
Give me a break, man. You know? And you're going to jump in and call Donald Trump a racist because he said, what the hell you ever do for your people out there in Baltimore, out there in Maryland? Come on, man. That's what I'm saying. And I use the same analogy, Alan Richard, when it comes to these black politicians in this city. They want to sit there and talk about how bad Trump is and this and that. But y'all niggas been in power for 25 years in city council and SSR, all kinds of money, and you can't make sure that the damn police department got tasers. You can't make sure that your schools, that where your black and brown children go to, got decent facilities to go in. Get rid of asbestos out of the schools. Come on, man. Stop the foolishness and the nonsense, man. But anyway, Elliot, thanks for your time, brothers. I'm going to, you know, go off and thank you for hearing me out and good show tonight as usual, Elliot, and put me on mute and I'll, you know, tune in for the rest of the show.
Talk to you.
Thanks, Elliot.
I can now.
Richard, let's go to 646.
Yo, what's going on, Richard and Elliot? Yo, from earlier, did I hear a brother call up and say that he was a research partner with Research West?
Don't you start.
No, the brother didn't say he was a research partner with West.
Don't you start.
I must be hearing things because I thought he said he was a research partner with Wes. Okay, so listen. Number one, Maxine Waters. You know, it's amazing how I'm going to get in trouble. What the hell? It's amazing how we love people who, when you look at them being in office, for the long period of time that they've been in office, and you look at their community, and you see that their community is basically a wasteland and what it should not be with the position that they hold, tells you a lot in regards to the sickness of the Negro. Now, Maxine Wood has been in Congress for a long period of time. Maxine Waters in Congress have a very nice position. But Maxine Waters' community ain't what it should be, just like Harlem ain't what it should be after that Negro Charlie Rango was in office for as long as he was. And I live in Harlem for the last 50-some years. And I'm telling you. So, you know, it's unfortunate that we as a people really have no plan, no agenda, or nothing to make our community what it should be. Now, here it is. We went out here and was a key player in getting this one cracker out of office and putting another cracker in office, and whatever you want to call it, sidekick. I mean, me, myself, I ain't even gonna go there with her. I'll pay her no mind. But the point of the matter is, what is black people gonna get in return? 2 years from now, matter of fact, I'll be even kinder. 18 months from now, when they start putting the pressure on you again to put somebody in office, what are they going to be able to tell black people that they were given in these next 18 months when this cracker gets in the office? Because the reality is, and let's just keep it 100 in all truthfulness, the black community right now is at its worst stage than it's ever really been. With what's really going on that's not even being discussed in the media. You got a homelessness rate that is just off the chain and gonna be growing. You got a job rate that's off the chain and gonna be growing. You got a healthcare rate that's about to be growing because they go get rid of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And, you know, it's just a situation to whereas now the Negro got something to be happy about. Because one brutal master is gone, and another more kinder master is now going to take over. And, you know, he going to have his favorite bed warmer at his side. So it's going to really be nice. You know what I mean? Because you always remember, back in slavery, the bedwinks that had a so-called good relationship with the master was always the buffer for those out in the outhouse and those in the in-house. So that's where we at right now, as far as I'm concerned, with Kamala Harris. She's nothing but the bedwink side chick. She ain't whatever. And it's kind of crazy, though. Because the reality is, Biden's health may diminish to the point within the next 2 years that the bastard may have to get up and go. Because he definitely got some form of dementia. I know that because my grandmother had it. And I know the early stages. He got a little bit of something-something. They're taking real good care of him. Believe me when I tell you. But the reality is, where are we really as black people at? What are we going to get for so-called giving our service to this cracker? I mean, the reality is, now you got a situation to where, as you know, in Atlanta, but Georgia, rather, excuse me, they got these two Senate seats up for grabs. Let's see what these Negro peons going to get for being the gatekeeper of that situation. Let's see what they going to do to help out black people, posters, and all of that. You know what I mean? I was looking at your boy, Robert No Neck Martin, today, and he already crying about how he wants some sort of dollars for what he's doing and how he's going to be in Georgia for a long period of time over these next 2 months to get the Negro pork chop chicken eating preacher and the cracker into the Senate to try and maybe even thing out and get control so that the bedwinks could be the voice. But I'm telling you, people start talking about reparations, that's the worst thing you can do at this time. Because they ain't going to give black people no reparations. Stop playing games. That shouldn't even be something that at this time should be discussed. A plan should be formulated over the next 2 years on how you really put that demand on them when they come back for you to let the bedwinks or someone else who they may seem to cast the bedwinks aside for to get out supposedly support.
Yeah, well, you know, well, let me say this. Listen, I don't mind you mentioning about the, but, you know, you don't have to because you don't know where that woman's sleeping with that man. You know, just mention, if you don't want to mention her name, just say, if you don't want to mention, wait a minute. If you don't want to mention her name, just say his vice presidential, you don't have to say it. You don't have to do all that. You don't have to do that.
when we go refer to a immoral supposedly black woman that's at the bedside of a Jew, who basically is in a position that ain't gonna do nothing for black people because she
just say his vice presidential running mate.
She ain't gonna do nothing for us.
Just say his vice presidential running mate.
Excuse me?
Just say his vice presidential running mate.
Or whatever. Whatever. We don't even have to refer to her because she's of no consequence. But no,
oh, yeah, you're right.
I just want to get to the point. You know, what are people going to make demands about? What are black people going to ask for? What do black people want? And what direction and what should we get from this cracker?
Go ahead, Richard.
That's a losing battle.
You know,
go ahead, Richard.
The one thing is how we frame it, and I'm stuck on this because I think that, as you say, yes, when we look at, and Elliot, you raised the statistical suffering and of the mass majority. But when we ask the question, not what we going to get, but who is going to get, you mentioned Roland Martin. You know, I mean, he's a part of an organizational network. I mean, we could say he's going to get, you know, or that organization is going to get.
That's not true.
They're going to get something. I mean, it's they are getting something. I'm not dealing with the amount. But what I'm trying to say is there's a class of black folks. I think, what's her name in Georgia that they're giving the images back up again? She's a part of the Democratic Party, you know, as far as dealing with the vote she's going to get. I can see here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you know, I use the reference of that Black Star Convention because of them being a part of the Democratic Party, they're going to get. It goes to they're going to get. Now, are the people who are unemployed?
What are black people going to get?
Wait a minute. Because they project themselves as black people. So when we make our analysis, we have to look at both sides. And so that we're clear that when we say that black people are not going to get, that the clarity of the analysis isn't that that's an absolute. There is a class, whether you call them misleadership class, whether you call them, what you call them? He walked out. What's the guy with the, that just earlier in the year, that had the cable, that has the cable TV station, that had the, was going up against the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. He got, you know, he got something, and the language, the marketing language was about being black people. So he benefited. I don't know, you know, when you ask, well, how many black people work in this network? And he's still buying networks. I can't get his name right now. Yeah, he's still buying networks. You know, how many black people is it? Yes. You know, that he got, I mean, that settlement, that law was supposed dealt with all black people. Do they still need to be a protective class?
Why don't you just say the gatekeepers are going to get something?
I'm responding. See, the thing is, because you're not, when you say black people are not going to get something, the way it's phrased is like the gatekeepers are not included.
A gatekeeper is not black people, bro.
To white people, all black people are black people.
Overlooks black people, and the masses of black people are black people.
Now, between
the masses of black people and the gatekeeper. And then when we
shift that analysis to your point, no, by the state, by the party, by the national financial trough and the corporate entity, the people like, and you know, when the people who were brought up in the women, because I'm saying that there is people who are servicing Black people right now. Peace Park is coming to my mind. They're servicing Black people food. They're servicing black people. But will they get something? Will they get something?
I realize there's a difference,
but in our analysis, in our projection, if we don't distinguish that, what it comes out to say that Black people, this general vague thing, Black people, that there is not all these distinctions, and what we are, need to be focusing Black people, our attention to, is the ones who will benefit and the ones who are not benefiting who are doing the work. That's the point.
Then you use a different word.
Then the different word is the community.
Then the different word is the community. You go from gatekeepers, overseer, which are individuals who are definitely always going to benefit because they hold a particular order as the overseer and the gatekeeper of the community. The question always boils down to one thing. When people talking about organizing, they're referring to the community. They're not referring to a single individual. If they are,
I agree. I can see that. And if they are, then what we need to be saying, then what is those people who are servicing those people in the community need that the gatekeepers are not giving?
A gatekeeper doesn't service the community.
I think you brought up the distinction that the people, the community people who are servicing the community,
My thought is not being clear because I think I'm trying to say that there are people who are servicing the community who are not getting anything from the gatekeepers.
Am I missing that?
Well, that's what you're saying. I think he's saying something different. I don't really.
In the position that he's in, it's the community. It's not the gatekeeper. The gatekeeper is the person who puts things into play from a spokesperson level in regards to the community that benefits from it because he's seen as the outward spokesman. The question becomes, what is Biden going to do for the community? Is he going to put things in place to deal with the homelessness? Is he going to put things in place that's going to help the schools? Is he going to deal with things in regards to other areas that we are suffering for?
I think what Richard is saying. I think what Richard is saying is in certain communities, and he used Philadelphia as an example. It's already things in place, so he don't Biden don't have to put nothing in place. It's already things in place, but the gatekeepers, as you were mentioning, should fund these community organizations that's already in place. Is that what you're saying, Richard?
And they're not, and they don't, because those who are providing that service are saying that the gatekeepers are keeping everything to themselves and are not taking what they're getting.
Who provides the service for the homeless Black community in Philadelphia? Who provides that service?
Usually it's the public service. Right now that I know of, the largest ones are probably public service and nonprofit organizations.
And a lot of them
are white controlled.
Okay, so stop right there.
So where do the black gatekeepers fit in that equation?
And what I'm trying to refocus, what I'm saying is just like focusing on Biden and Trump, when we're focusing and only giving attention to the gatekeepers, we're excluding those who are doing the work, who need our resources, as meager as it may be, our attention, as limited as it may be. They need our attention to be able to, even if it's shame the mistake, gatekeepers.
The mistake is, this is what I'm trying to say to you. The mistake is that we don't understand that the gatekeepers serve no real purpose whatsoever other than to benefit themselves. What the community has to do is make the politician understand that he must give the money in the reference to the people that are providing the services. So whereby the services get...
Mm-mm. Hello?
To get the services when it's all said and done, because we live it precariously through the gatekeeper.
But what so I'm saying, only my last point on this, my last emphasis, is that point of, but we should be naming those who are providing the services, because what $1 trillion, $1 billion is being spent is to pump up the names of the gatekeepers. The $1 billion is spent to give up the images. It requires
to divide that, bro. That's what you missed. The black community is looking for the gatekeeper to provide that information that you speak of.
Provide what information? Wait a minute. Provide what information?
The gatekeeper never does it. That's where you make the mistake in understanding of the community. The gatekeeper never goes to the overseer or the master and says to the master, give it to this group because this is the group that is taking care of business, and then inform the community this is where you have to go because they are the ones who are providing the service. That ain't their interest. That's not their interest. It's just like, look at what Al Sharpton do to black people in America. He goes and sit down at the table with Obama for damn near 8 years, and what did he get from black community other than marching? He didn't go there with saying, well, this is a program that the money should go to, and I demand that the money go there, and if the money doesn't go there, we're not going to vote for you. We're not going to do this. Nah, that's what the gatekeeper never does. Because he always wants to be in a position to make it seem like he's doing something, like he's negotiating something. And in all honesty, he ain't doing the damn thing because they bypassed the gatekeeper to give it to the white man that then gives the organization that's helping black people trinkets. But we don't get it because we don't think well enough to act in that matter. So when it's all said and done, the black people in Philadelphia are going to be in the same position a year from now.
Only, and only, and respectfully, Jay, the only challenge in this moment, you know, going back and forth, and I always like to, I'm bringing up because this is in this moment, and maybe, hey, Elliot, I'm, you know, like really dealing with, that I see the formation. I mean, we keep interviewing people who are doing things, but what I don't hear and haven't heard in our common political, economic, and social commentary individually is to celebrate those who are doing and show and be able to help provide the linkages they need compared to, we're always talking about the big white man and his surrogates. However they come, we're our constant, most of 90, maybe say 90%, 99% of our dialogue goes into creating the analysis of what the big white man is doing, what the big white man has done, what the big white man will do and what his minions, the big white man minions, are going to
how
do.
We gonna get and the money
how
to
we
the community.
Are just sitting
how
here.
We, how are we going to get the money to the community and if we don't get the money?
And I think that's what, and that's my distinction, and maybe I might be wrong. Maybe I'm, you know,
how are we going to punish the people?
Because organization, and yes, we need to have this thing called currency. But what we need more is social organizational commitment as an individual and being able to collectively, critically think about the problem we have confronting us, whether that be homeless, whether that be children literacy rate, whether that be the healthcare, and be able to, with the resources that exist. Now, there's other resources out there, but with the resources that exist around us, and that is our human ability to say that we can service each other.
Hey, Elliot, that's
what we need more than the dollar. The dollar only enhances that, but what we need is the commitment, the social commitment of relationship they call organization to do it. And what we have a depravity, and what those people who are doing that work, what they have a depravity of is somebody walking up on the street and saying, brother, I see you tilling that earth. I'll give you a couple hours off and I'll till it for you. Sister,
hey,
I see
where do you see our position in the next year based on now that Biden's in office?
What do you mean? Where do I see our position? What do you mean?
Where do you see black people? Where do you see the crises in regards to what the virus has done to us, what the homeless crises that our community is facing, the job crises that the community is facing? Where do you see us a year from now? Will we basically be in a better position or in a stagnant position or even yet worse?
Well, this situation nationally is going to get worse. So, consequently, our people's situation will probably get worse. But the thing is this, for me, I'm getting a little feedback in the background. I think you got something up in the background, Jay.
Okay. Hold on one second. Jay, I got it.
Yeah, the thing I see is this, because we do have a demand on the table right now. And when I say a demand, see, and I'm not going to get into an ideological back and forth about this, because these groups have been doing the work for over 30 years. It's a demand on the table right now. It was there while this guy is in office. It's going to be there when this new guy takes over. And you know what I'm talking about. Or you should. Richard, you know what I'm talking about.
Please.
Okay. The demand that in Cobra, September 12th, members of the Nation of Islam, other groups have been working on is a demand for reparations. Now, they got 162 people in Congress that have signed on to sponsor the bill. Now, I think they got a partnering bill in the Senate. So you got 162 people, and most of them caucus members, that you can directly hold accountable if this stuff don't get to the floor. Now, I'm not saying I got any faith in whites. I'm saying that this is something I've been mentioning. If our people want to get involved in this political crap that's here in this country, keep a scorecard on people that's supposed to be representing you and hold them accountable. Now, the demand is already there. So, this next Congress that coming, they can't throw it in the trash because 162 people have signed on to this. Now, if they try to back out, if they don't do what they're supposed to do, then it's groups that's been fighting for this. And see, the thing is this, they're fighting for repair for all black people that's here. That includes the Democratic followers, the repugnant followers, and people that ain't even involved in politics. It's for all of us, not just for a certain bunch. So if you got repugnant members or Democratic members that don't want no reparations, because you done heard blacks talk foolish about repair for what these people have done to our ancestors. If they don't want it, they don't want it. But these groups is fighting for all of us. And they got people that they can hold accountable now. It's 162 names, and I'm just talking about the Congress people. I don't have the ones from the Senate in front of me. It's 162 people that they can hold directly responsible for if they don't do what they're supposed to do. Now, before this past year, because it was a flurry of people signing this past year, maybe year and a half, when reparations became the hot topic and Europeans let some of these black elected officials start signing on. Before that, for years, they wouldn't touch it. So, okay, they signed on because they got permission. They didn't sign their name now. It's something to hold them accountable for. And believe me, the groups that's been fighting is going to definitely hold them accountable. Hopefully, some other people that become aware, might be aware of what these groups have been fighting for and ain't did nothing about it, like Richard's saying about joining some of these groups, they can join in and help hold them accountable. Because believe me, the groups that's been fighting and some of the members of those groups we done had on this program, they're going to definitely hold them people accountable that have signed their name on to fight for repair for our ancestors. And if they don't do it, if they start shucking and jiving and backing, doing the moonwalk, they're going to be held accountable. That's what we need to do if we're going to be messing around in this political swamp that our people is involved in. Hold these people accountable. That's all I'm saying. It's already a group out there with something concrete that they can hold the politicians accountable for. Now, there's other groups out there that's doing stuff that's concrete, period, that don't have nothing to do necessarily with politics. But it's one group out there that I can mention offhand, and if I'm missing somebody, maybe you can help me, Richard. But it's one group out there.
That was a policy that was in the political arena that requires more people to be able to participate that haven't been participating in their local areas to support those, because you go in a lot of those. The organization is doing, I would say they ain't got large numbers of people.
No, they don't.
So it's a place where people can go, and you can be able to, as you say, hold these. If it's about what your vote did, you could be able to show your power of your vote by holding them accountable, by demanding that they push that.
Yeah, I like that. Exactly.
It's a policy.
And when they don't do it.
To me, that's maturity.
Exactly. And when they don't do it, some of them people that we done had on this program going to definitely come and let the Time for Awakening audience know, or let people know in general that's involved with those groups. We got to hold these people accountable. No longer can we let these people just talk to you, urinate in your face and tell you it's raining. Because that's what they've been doing to black people. It's insulting to say that, but it's true.
And now they're talking about putting Hakeem Jeffries, the possibility of having him as the speaker, because he's supposed to be the mediator between the progressives and the moderates.
I hope they do sign him on, because they almost had to twist his arm to sign that H.R. Ford bill. And to be honest, I don't know whether he'd sign yet. He might have. I got to check the number. But I shared with you that thing when he said with those Jews, Richard. It was almost hearing that crap, boy. I'm telling you, if he don't do what he's supposed to do in regards to that bill on the table for repair for this, what these Europeans did to our ancestors, every black person need to hold all of them people accountable, not cheer them people. And then you got other people going in. You got two people from New York. And see, this is the thing. Our people got to realize how they're being played. You got two guys from New York going in. It's sweet as sugar. Gay. I don't know. Maybe some people think I'm throwing slurs. I ain't trying to necessarily throw no slurs, but they're gay. Now, if you look at the national picture, you got a bunch of gay men running for these offices. And you got gay women. I read on the Time for Awakening that you had a gay. She admitted she was a queer gay, Muslim. You remember when I read that, Richard?
Hey, the gay mafia. You got all of these.
See, but I ain't talk about the fact that they're gay mafia. You got an image here that our people got to realize what they're doing. This propaganda and this image of black people and black men being gay, that's only a small percentage, a very small percentage of men in this country, black men. But if you look at these politicians, most of them is gay or bordering on it. You got that guy Gillum down in Florida. Look like a regular guy. But he ain't getting caught in the hotel room with two white prostitutes doing what they do, doing what you do with a woman.
Hey, monkey man got to be a monkey man.
See, man, listen, you got to raise your level sometime. You don't have to be calling them.
That ain't
no joke. Hey, come on, man.
Hey, but Ellie, the point of the matter is,
because it ain't no joke, that image that they portraying to young black people.
Yeah,
showing these men and women, and these people are young. They ain't no old ones, although they had an old one that went out there in California. He's 60 years old and said, I'm gay. See, that's an image there.
You know how to keep it under wraps like Lindsey Graham.
That's an image there.
But the thing is this.
Never mind, you don't follow what I'm saying, but it ain't no problem.
The gays are the ones who's going to cause the real conflict and uprising in this country.
Yeah, well, I ain't even talking about that, but that's what you missed my whole point. Never mind.
What's going to happen. No, I'm trying to explain to you what's leading up to the real
uprising. You're talking about this gays in the country. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're talking about the gays in the country. You're talking about the gays in the country. See, that's what I'm saying. You missed the whole point of what I'm saying. That type of activity is a part of European society, period. Before they came here, when they basically came out of the caves of Europe, when they established Greco-Roman society, that was a part of their society. I ain't talking about no gay and lesbian lobby here. That's trash. That ain't even a part of what I'm talking about.
What you're talking about is imagery. What I'm saying,
yeah. Now, what type of image? That's exactly what I'm talking about. What type of image are they portraying by putting these black politicians out there, and a huge percentage of them is gay? What message are they trying to send to your children? What?
The demasculation of the black man. That's what they're doing.
What message are they trying to send to your children?
They're trying to send the message that it's all right to be gay.
Oh, okay.
That's why when the Supreme Court go after gay marriage, if they do, it's going to cause the type of conflicts in this country, and maybe black folks could learn how to deal with the situation when we, over the next period of years, don't get anything for this great vote that we just gave, as one would say, the daddy. It all plays a part in how the narrative is created and, like you said, put in front of our people to emasculate us. There's no other reason why a person is supposed to be identified as a homosexual before he's identified as black. That phenomenon just done happened over the last, maybe 15 years?
Yeah, maybe shorter than
that. There's a lot of black people who are gay or who are bisexual that it never came out. I got cousins that are that way, and you would never know unless you know. But the point of the matter is now it's being used as a tool of acceptance. And why do they put it as a tool of acceptance? To have control, to put a dominant position over you.
In order to perpetuate what I'm going to add, the adjective vulgar individualism.
Mm-hmm.
By having vulgar individualism, then you move further and further away from having a collective decadency. Action.
It's called decadency, Richard. That's what America is.
Because we're talking about politics. So, you know, I can get the moral part, and then I'll leave that for others. But what we're seeing is the political activity and policy and the political momentum and the acquisition of political power which only comes out of organizational effort by a certain
and that's what the homosexuals have been able to do over the last few years, dealing
with that, we have to deal with in the competitive arena, regardless how you label them or what they label themselves, in the competitive arena of political organization and effectiveness of policy acquisition, where are we? Which goes back to your question. Are we going to be better off?
That's what I've been trying to say. As a collective, have not placed ourselves in a position like they try to make it seem to compete against those others. That's why we are basically the bottom of every social category in this country.
Well, I just mentioned where the group that's been active for a number of years have placed themselves in a position to hold somebody accountable.
Right. And where we could be able to.
And we can help them.
Right.
Yeah, but Richard and Elliot, how do we as a people who are enslaved here, who, as we always like to point out, build the country, be the people at this present time, and if we're going to be truthful about it, are basically at the bottom of every social category other than the Native Americans who were first here. That right there is something that we never address. That's why I get upset every time I turn around when some Hispanic, Puerto Rican, gay person, or whatever try to tell me something in regards to where one is supposed to act and behave as a black man in this country. You don't have that right. But for some reason, we as a collective has allowed them to be in that position to even make it seem that they have the right to tell me and you anything.
We have abdicated our individual responsibility to be involved in networking, community organization with each other in order to accomplish, to come to an agreement of how we're going to solve our problem. You cannot do it by being an individual speaking out in the wilderness. You have to do it by being in some kind of collective fashion. Mm-hmm. And when we have material resources.
That's the biggest mistake of the black man right there. Because every
what's the biggest
time
mistake?
In any coalition with any other group of people. Let me finish. Any time we've been in any type of organization with any other ethnic group.
Who said any other ethnic group? You're not listening. He didn't say any other ethnic group. You're not listening, man.
He didn't say any other ethnic group?
No.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said that.
and that's the challenge is that we haven't been organized. We haven't been creating relationships with each other. We have allowed them to be able to disunite. Now they're making that disuniting go at the point of even these quote unquote gender wars, where we're supposed to be at war with black men and black women.
I know
they're giving us the numbers that, well, the black women, you know, voted this way, and look at, they was at 90-something%, and the black man, he voted this way, and he was at 88%. See, they ain't in line with each other.
I know it.
That ain't our framing this narrative.
It's other
somebody
people.
Else.
Yep.
But that's not something that you should ever acknowledge. That's not something that you should ever get rid of it. I go after the Cubans. I go after the Venezuelans. I go after the Latino who shows that they're doing something against the so-called collective interest, but I always remember those that deem themselves to be Afro-Latino behave in a different fashion than those that behave as Cubans or Venezuela. And you know what the funny thing about that whole equation is? They always talking about socialism, but them bastards are the biggest ones who love American socialism.
I don't know how we got off on Cuban and Venezuelan, but we're gonna get Ray in.
Listen, man, y'all have a beautiful weekend. And hey, man, all I can say is we need to figure out what we're gonna do to put pressure on Biden and Harris to give us something and not come back to us in 18 months asking them to save them again from a disaster that basically we just diverted. But hey, also, let's remember, this ain't over. This ain't over. Because the thing is, I believe Trump is more dangerous now than he ever was, because he know his bubble about to burst, man. And a person like that, when they know they bubble about to burst, they ain't no telling what he may do. And you know what the funny thing is? He gonna get other people to do his dirty work. And we, because of the way that we act and behave sometimes, not gonna be on point nor on code to see what's about to happen to us. So all I say is, anybody that's out there listening, have your tool in each corner of the house, be on your swerve, protect yourself and your family, keep your eyes and your ears and back in front of you, and just walk slowly and watch and observe, because these are some very dangerous times for black folks. And listen, look out for each other, love one another, and remember, we got to save ourselves, because ain't nobody else going to save us. And listen, Richard and Elliot, may y'all have a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful weekend, man. And thank you again for your service, as they say.
Dalty. Richard, good conversation this evening. But before we leave, I just want to reiterate that the work that in Cobra on September 12th, the Nation of Islam have been doing, and NARC, several of the groups have been doing on this reparations front, it's going to come to fruition in that, that Congress coming in after this man's holiday, Richard, I think it's in January or whatever.
Yeah.
I think, because I don't know anything about that, how they do this political stuff. I don't think they're going to be doing anything leading up until this Christmas holiday.
No.
But I think in January, when everybody takes their new seats, is when you got this on the table. You got 162 members so far that have signed for this. And I think when we used talking before, you remember when we first had Cam on and it was only 30-something members.
Right.
I think, you remember?
Yeah.
And I think he mentioned that you needed 110 or something like that to have it go to the floor. You remember when might get Cam on again. But you remember he mentioned the number. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that 162 is past that number. I do know that. That mm-hmm. They got more than enough, and that's in Congress. I know they got some partnering bill in the Senate, and they do have some people that have signed on. I think Booker introduced it, and I think it's a couple of people. I don't know how many out of the Senate signed on. So it has to come up for debate or whatever, however that works. And like I said before, we can get Cam on to kind of go over that procedure again. But that's something immediately that these people can be held accountable for. And some of our people need to educate themselves to that process of which is going to take place there. Because for people that don't know, that's something that they can hold these people accountable for, these black elected officials, right off the bat.
And if I can add, Elliot, and we can hold them accountable for it, and we can define what we want it to look like.
Exactly.
To solve the problems that we exist. Not just say that, and then they come up with the solution. No. What is it that we want this repair to look like?
Yeah, because that's
a part of the other part of, so it's clear, not only I want you to do it to make sure it happens, but when it gets through the process, this is what it better look like.
Yeah, because how Europeans going to deal. They're going to want to set the parameters on what everything looks like. That's how they deal.
Right.
That's how they deal. So we got work to do. We have work to do. And hopefully more people are joining the organization or the organizations in their cities. Mm-hmm. Before we leave this evening, and shoot, I want to thank everybody for participating at Open Forum. Before we do that, tomorrow from 4 to 6, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with host Alfonso Watkins. And then myself and Brother Richard are back on Sunday at 7. I want to thank everybody for participating. I want to thank everybody for participating in the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
children, to save the children, to save the children.